Blog Talk Radio.
You're now listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, broadcasting from sunny Orange County, California. Filmmaker, journalist, and film historian, Paul Booth.
Aloha, welcome to Talking Pictures. I'm your host, Paul Booth. You know my deal. I'm always happy to be here. This is one of the highlights of my week. Actually, it is the highlight of my week, other than seeing friends or family or going to the cinema. This is the coolest time of the week for me. I have my first caller coming in here from Washington. We'll get into introducing her. Let's see. Here we go. Welcome, Erin. Are you with us?
Hey, Paul. Yes, I'm here.
Excellent. Excellent. I was just going through the introductions. We're going to be listeners tonight. We're going to be continuing our Oscar wrap episodes, where we will be doing one also tomorrow night with a panel of females from the Film Fatalas group, where they have groups all over the country and other country of females that get together and support each other's work. We'll also be having another episode with a filmmaker, and we might be bringing in an Oscar nominee to talk about being at the Oscars. So,
wow.
Fingers on that. But tonight, I'm very happy to have back Erin Murphy. She gave us a great review of The Martian when we did our Take Two series. And she, I bill her as the film buff lover who in this office knew more about I know filmmakers that it's their thing all day. And they said, oh, I didn't see that. I didn't see this. And she saw most of it, so we are thankful to have her time. And tonight will be a special thing that we've never done, where her son will be joining us, who is a pre-visual effects artist for such small-known credits as Godzilla and Divergent, jokingly. And also, before he's on the phone, what was your favorite film that you saw of his work
this year? My favorite film?
No, your favorite
probably
film that Josh worked on.
Oh, that Josh worked on. I'm trying to think. I never read Divergent, but I thought the movie was really cool. I enjoyed that. And of course, you know, I think the Avengers, because I believe if I'm not mistaken, we saw that when we flew down for the, and we saw it with him. So that was kind of cool. But let me tell you, I teach young adults, and they think what he does is the coolest thing ever. So I get a lot of street cred.
That's because it is.
For what he does. Yeah, I get lots of street cred.
Yeah, welcoming Josh to the show. I know I was the hero of the year when I told my godson that my film housemate worked on the Avengers. He thought I knew the Hulk because he was still young enough to buy into it. I'm sorry, I don't know Robert Downey Jr. If I did, I'd be having lunch with him before I introduced you. But now joining us is Josh, who is, of course, Erin Murphy's son. And Josh, when you came on, I was just We were mentioning what you did. I was asking your mom her favorite film of yours. Mine has to be Divergent. I was so bummed to miss Godzilla in 3D. So now for all you listeners, Josh, among many things, is the creator of the logo that you see when you watch this show. And just a little bit of background, we had brought Aaron on the show because it just floored me how much he paid attention to films and the nominations. And we thought it would be a great idea to not always, it's always about the artist. And I thought moms create the artist, literally. So why not see what the creator of these great artists that we have thinks? So we want to welcome them both to the show. They're both return guests, and we know we'll have them back. So now that all my spiel's out of the way, I want to jump into with you guys. And being mother and son, you know your cues of when it's mom's time to talk or son's time to be quiet. So I would say let's start off with Aaron. Let's start off with what you thought about how the outcome was of the Best Picture.
I actually screamed. I do believe I did text Josh, like, what? Because I've never missed an Oscar in probably 50 years. And I always thought, okay, you know, there's a role, best director, best actor, boom, best movie. When they announced Spotlight, my jaw dropped, and I literally screamed, what? Because I don't know, you two would know all the statistics. But I don't know how many times that has happened. But I was floored.
First time.
Absolutely floored. That was the first time? Okay.
First time the Best Picture's only one screenplay.
Okay.
As the other award.
I saw every single
Best Picture winner has also won screenplay and nothing else. First time in history.
Okay. Now, but
yeah, I was excited too. Tina and I both, my wife Tina, we both were saying, all right. We shouted at that moment. Because we both very recently seen Spotlight, both loved it, both thought Mark Ruffalo was great. I would have liked to see him win. I thought he was so good.
Yes.
But Spotlight for me was the movie that had the substance. It was the sort of movie that was telling a very important story, told it very well, great cast performance. They won that SAG Ensemble Award, very deservedly so. And I just thought it was the kind of movie that the Oscars are sort of known for doing. They'll nominate the blockbusters, and they'll all give the box office its due. But when it comes time to actually give the big award out, a lot of times it does go to the Spotlights that year.
Are you going to talk about how because Josh is talking to me a little bit about that the voting kind of changed, the way that they voted this year changed?
Well, yeah, and it's going to change for next year as well, slightly.
Like if not enough, like if everybody votes in the first one, then they go, and the first one doesn't get the majority of the votes, yada, yada, then it goes, it was something about, that's why someone
said
they weren't surprised
at
the Spotlight.
Yeah, certain political elections are done like this too. It's basically the concept of instant runoff voting where everybody picks a first choice, but then they also pick a second and a third choice. So, like you say, if there's the first run and it doesn't meet a certain quota of votes, then what they do is eliminate the lowest vote-getting picture, have those people vote again, and then they just do it again and again until they meet a certain threshold. So what some people say is, oh, you know, this kind of makes the less flashy and less diehard, beloved films, gives them more presence, and maybe a lot of people's second choices do better than, different groups who might be a smaller number but really love their movies. But in the end, I mean, if we get a movie like Spotlight winning, like I said, I'm happy with that. I still have not seen The Revenant. I can't be a fair judge of how they compare. All I know is that Spotlight has a very meaty story, tried for a lot of social significance, and I don't think there's anything wrong with it eking out a win against some, much higher produced and bigger blockbusters that were in the category with it.
And I kind of liked that because maybe if they realize that the Academy or Hollywood or whomever the powers that be sees that, hey, these storytelling, moving, powerful, thought-provoking, you know, extremely disturbing. I mean, that was my era. I remember that stuff happening growing up in New Jersey. If these things can get this picture, then maybe people won't shy away from them. They go, well, let's make more of them because, you know, I think Hollywood really underestimates the mentality of moviegoers. I think they dumb everything down, and I like thought-provoking movies. You know, subtitles, I don't have to read when I go to the movies. I mean, that kind of attitude. And I think, you know, we need to raise the bar and make better movies that are thought-provoking because that certainly is one. You know, for
yeah,
sure.
It's a big discussion. Yeah, it's a difficult topic because you've got a lot of people who want those meatier stories. Maybe they're staying at home. Maybe they're watching TV. Maybe they're getting it from the dramas that are now available on, binge-watching series. So, yeah, movies in a way have to provide the counter-argument to that where they're, you know, bigger budgets, they're flashier, they're more epic, something that TV can't deliver, which, you know, becomes this process of a self-fulfilling prophecy. You've got blockbusters that do well. People start to expect that, you know, that's if I'm going to go to a theater, it better be something major, and they'll wait for a spotlight to come to video on demand. So I think you can, from within the industry, say, Spotlight, not nearly as much business in theaters. Why should we try to make a bunch of these? Because they still don't financially make a ton of money. But like you say, as long as they get Oscars, that's going to get people's attention. And that's always, at the end of the year, that's the big bragging right that studios won, in addition to, the billions of dollars that the studio itself brings in. And last year, let's not forget, was the biggest year in Hollywood's history for record-breaking profits. So it's in a way, it's good for the industry where it's going now. As much as it is competing with television, it's still doing fine. It's still bringing in tons of money, and that's a great sign, especially as the worldwide market opens up with countries like China becoming more participants.
Yeah, I also think so, too, that some people will see the SAGs or the Golden Globes and go, these things look like they're winning. Maybe I'll go see them. So a lot of people go see because, it's getting a lot of hype, so I'll go see them. Like for me, everybody's talking about this movie. I'm going to go see it. So sometimes I think people wait to see, if everybody's talking about it, it must be really good. But I'm really curious about how many, because I am a movie goer. I'm also a movie watcher. Mm-hmm. I'm curious how many people watch these movies at home, once their kids go to bed, you know, in the privacy of their house, as opposed to, we can't get
I'm raising my hand as you speak. I'm one of them.
Yeah, and especially where you guys live because your movies are so flippin' expensive.
Yeah,
good
I mean, I live in Hollywood, and I'm still one of the people that can't get out to the theaters more than maybe twice a year.
I
work in the industry.
$16?
So you do what you got to do because if you love movies, you'll find a way to see them. And I do want to support the industry, but I just can't get out all that much.
I saw 4 movies in 1 week. I could do that if I lived in L.A.
You're the opposite.
I take one for the team, Josh. I take one for the team.
You're the empty nester getting the family's average per capita movie average up.
I got a punch card.
I was with Aaron on that. I'm sure you remember our messages where I had just been blessed with a surgery where there was nothing to do but go to the cinema and on $5 day at a non-rundown theater, I just thought, I'm going to see every single nominee I can see. And my opinion on Spotlight, I was fortunate because I saw 7 of the 8 nominees. And it's funny because I've never seen all the nominees except for the year of 12 Years a Slave. And what was funny was I had a link for it for the next day, and I thought, it's okay. I have one left to watch. And then they announced that, really? I watched everything but what one? So for me, I really think Spotlight was great. I thought it had great political ramifications. I thought it had great, I was raised Catholic. I don't want to go down that Catholic road.
I hear that, brother.
But for me, in all honesty, and of course, Josh and I have had this conversation many times, but for audience, for me, I was, when I saw Room, you know, for me, going through the list, The Big Short was tough because we lost our family and business of 20 years because of all those scumbag dealings. Bridge of Spies was, my mom was that generation of get under your desk because there might be nuclear war. So that was hard for her to watch. Brooklyn, the immigrant coming over, that was what her great grandmother did. So that was kind of a nice little, all the immigration issues that we discussed. The Martian for me, I've had to rethink, but of The Revenant, Room, and Spotlight, I really thought Room was going to win because, to me, Room went back to actor, script, camera.
Absolutely.
But if it was in a year where there was no Spotlight, it would have had a much better shot. But, it, you know, this was the year of Spotlight, and that movie, I mean, even early on in the awards season, it had a lot of buzz. And it felt to me like The Revenant, in the last month or so, got a lot of the momentum on its side by the end. And that's why I think a lot of people were convinced it was going to sweep so many categories. It ended up only getting 3 wins. But Spotlight, I remember being an early favorite for Best Picture. And it, yeah, I should have listened to that more because I picked Revenant in the end. I only got 16 out of 24, by the way, when I called in for my Oscar predictions. Very confident, head full of steam. And yeah, that night provided a lot of surprises. I think there were probably 6 or so underdogs that won against what people were predicting.
It was near the underdog, that's for sure.
Yeah. We're talking about little stories and how you were alluding to Spotlight. Before I moved to Hawaii, I lived 10 minutes from Straight Outta Compton. I actually lost an uncle who got caught up in that, dealing cocaine and doing it to get by. And he, when I was 7 years old, he OD'd from crack cocaine. And so that story to me, when I watched that movie, it was so authentic. I remember the music. I remember not being allowed to listen to the music. I remember my dad telling me, stay away from these neighborhoods because of the crack and the violence, not because of black people. And so for me, that one, I really wanted to see that win Best Original Screenplay because it nailed just everything, not even as a movie. I mean, it was like it was just replaying a life. And I think that, you know, I that's the one I was pulling for. I did not see, I'll pronounce it wrong, Ex Machina or Inside Out.
Ex Machina.
Yeah, I had the good fortune to see all of the male actors, 3 of the 5 best actresses. I did see all of the best supporting actors, and then I saw 3 of the best supporting actresses. So one of you decide which acting category we should discuss before we jump into director.
Doesn't matter to me. I've seen them all. So whatever you guys want to talk about, I'm on board.
Josh, which one's
No, no, no. I'll follow your lead because I've probably seen the least out of all of us.
Okay. Well, maybe you should just hang up now. No, I'm just kidding.
Go to bed, sweetie. Let the adults.
It's been fun, everybody.
It's better for those people that don't prepare for such wonderful podcasts with excellent hosting. but actually, We can zip through this here, Aaron. I know you saw Trumbo, Josh, and I know you saw The Martian.
Loved it. Loved Trumbo, yeah. And Martian, I liked a lot as well.
Yeah, Eddie Redmayne was fantastic, but I don't think if there was any competition, in my opinion, with DiCaprio, besides just he was the obvious front runner, And maybe you have a different take, Aaron. I feel was Michael Fassbender as Steve Jobs. I just thought that it was that Aaron Sorkin dialogue, and it was that kind of world that Sorkin creates so well. But of the ones you saw, would you say there was somebody else you would have agreed with over Leo?
No, but I don't think that Michael Fassbender should have been in that category. I would have rather seen Will Smith take Michael Fassbender's place. That's just
I did not see Steve Jobs, but to me, I thought Matt Damon was the, because that was the discussion leading up to the Oscars after the Oscars So White controversy started. You know, was how do you make room for someone like Will Smith or Idris Elba from Beasts of No Nation, which was also a great performance. I would have said Matt Damon, nothing against him. It's just that his performance was terrific. It just wasn't one of those performances where I thought, wow, that was for the ages. You know, I just thought he did a very funny, you know, heartening performance.
He played Matt Damon.
He played a little bit of a wise ass in parts. Exactly. I mean, he was a very capable actor in that role. I just thought as far as something that you'd see, you know, the highlight reel as they're just about to announce the winner, I couldn't tell you what his most amazing moment in that movie was that blew me away. It was just a very consistent performance that I enjoyed.
Okay. And to me, like Michael Fassbender, I left that movie going, I hate Steve Jobs. What a prick.
So can well, I say maybe prick? He did his job.
Sorry, Paul.
Know, I don't hate him for the things that movie portrayed. I hate him for destroying the handshake, destroying the personal face-to-face talking. I never thought I'd live to see the day where I stopped being friends with someone because of a Facebook dispute. And I know that Zuckerberg, but it's just the whole way that Jobs made everything our phones and. And don't get me wrong, I get it when you have kids and you're married and I live on a different planet not being married. But, you know, it's that age-old thing where we don't take 5 minutes to call somebody, but then you see they spend 2 hours on Facebook or texting on their iPhone. So Steve Jobs, to me, I was just into it with Sorkin. I'll watch anything he writes.
Even Aaron Sorkin said it was a really great movie that nobody saw.
Yeah,
the critics loved it, but nobody. And I wouldn't have gone to the movies to see it. I rented it because I'm just like, and I like Michael Fassbender. Don't get me wrong, but I was just like, you know, I'd already seen one with Ashton Kutcher, so I thought I knew.
That was the other problem with that. It wasn't the first one about that subject.
Oh, and that
but was two totally like. But the one with Ashton Kutcher was like pre-Apple, was really early, so you got more of his backstory. Where the one with Michael Fassbender, he was already successful, so it kind of picked up where the Ashton Kutcher one left off. So it was a much more later in life kind of thing. But like you said, Josh, if I didn't like Michael Fassbender and thought that Steve Jobs was not very nice, then he did his job, because it sounds like Steve Jobs wasn't very nice. He was a little cold and you know, and standoffish. But yeah,
yes,
but I also didn't think Kate Winslet deserved a nomination. I think they were kind of stretching with her. And I didn't think Rachel McAdams deserved a nomination.
Yeah,
it was another capable performance. I wouldn't say it was something that blew me away. I mean, somebody described it pretty well. They said, basically, she spends the whole movie listening to people. And,
it's like I think sometimes they're grasping, like, oh darn, we have to fill two more categories. Who can we get? And yeah,
and it's not
and
for any shortage of good performances. I think a lot of it has to do with industry clout and things like that. You know, certain people have more momentum than others with their careers, and you know, Jennifer Lawrence has been on a tear the last few years, so she's definitely a force now at that ceremony. But
heck yeah.
Pull
what, is she 25 or something insane like that?
Right. I mean, she's coming out of the gate.
That's
crazy.
They didn't have anything with her this year, but if you look up Amy Adams, I know that's not Rachel Adams, but if you look up Amy Adams, I think she's up to like her fifth or sixth. And I know she's, I mean, I think she's great. I loved her in The Fighter, but looking at the Best Actress category, I hadn't heard of 45 Years till last night, so now I'm dying to track it down. But
Well, let me touch on that. I saw it. Here's the thing. It's an art film. It's got. It would probably have a very small demographics. It's about a couple that's married for 45 years. Okay, so how many people can relate to that? So you lose a lot of those people. She's a British actress, so not everybody knows her. She's a British actress, and so I'm thinking, I had to go out of my way to see it, but I saw it because of her. And it's really, really interesting because the minute my sister's a huge movie fan, she goes, call me when you leave the theater. I have to discuss it with you. Because the ending is like, well, did this happen or did this happen? But it's a very character-driven movie. I wouldn't say it's slow. I know a lot of people say character-driven is politically correct for saying it wasn't slow. But it has a very small niche of an audience. But I really enjoyed it. Being someone who's almost married 40 years, I found it interesting. And all of a sudden, there's this little bit of a twist. You're like, oh, I didn't see that coming. But yeah, I mean, you're going to have to go out of your way to try to find that bad boy. Because it was not playing in any big theaters. I had to go once again down to my little art house in Tacoma to see it. But I enjoyed it. I really enjoyed it. I thought she was really good. And I liked the fact that people are like, who is she? Even though she's been an actress forever, where did this movie come from? I like that. I like that, you know, they're not all, like Josh said, not all blockbusters.
Well, I was...
Mom, here's
a
question for you. Oh, yeah. Can I ask one question of you? It's just about this year in general. Let's say 5 or 10 years from now, somebody says, what's a movie you would absolutely recommend that came out in 2015 that was one of the Oscar nominees in any category? Which one would you say, oh, this is one you have to see from that year?
The Room.
Same goes for you, Paul. The Room?
You said Room, Aaron?
Yeah.
Room. Room, yeah. Me, obviously not the quality of Charlie Chaplin, but I call it Charlie Chaplin because it was just what movies are and were and just what you could do.
It was a camera, two people in a room, and you were. I was invested in these people. I wanted to know her backstory, and it was riveting because you're like, wow, look. And it was amazing at such a young age what she had done. She had wasn't planning on getting pregnant, had this child, and the life that she created in that 13 by 13 cell, pretty much what she was in. I thought it was fascinating. And, you know, no special effects, no crazy lights, you know, no CG, no offense, Josh, but it was just pure movie making. And I, now the topic was upsetting, much like Spotlight. But I thought it was just, I thought, what is this movie and who is this woman? I mean, I'd never even heard of Brie Larson. And I'm a huge movie star.
Now that we've switched to that subject of who is she and what has she done, one movie I saw her in, very small cameo, basically, but the movie was terrific for getting a sense of the young actors that are out right now. It's called The Spectacular Now. I know I've recommended this to Paul before, but I saw that on Amazon Prime. And she's in it very briefly, but it's got Miles Teller, who you guys would remember from the Divergent movies. He's that dark-haired...
No, I remember her from Whiplash.
Kid. Yeah, Whiplash, of course. Another movie where I heard terrific in. But he does a great job in that, and also Shailene Woodley's in it as well, playing opposite him, much like the Divergent movies. Great movie. But yeah, Brie Larson's in that too.
Josh, was that The Fault in Our Stars?
Yes.
Fault in Our Stars was Shailene Woodley, and I don't remember his last name, but he's also in the Divergent movies.
That's right.
He's got some sort of, like, I think maybe Swedish or European kind of name.
Just to jump off a target for a second, and all we can say is, if you haven't seen The Fault in Our Stars, easier to find by looking up Shailene Woodley's IMDb page. That was one of the most brilliant movies that I would have never seen. It happened to be coming out.
It was very sweet.
One right turn and it was a Hallmark movie and it remained a film. With Brie Larson, I saw Room, I had seen Joy. I hadn't seen Brooklyn, but I knew it was her. I knew there was nothing that was going to take that award away. And this segues into supporting actor, which in my opinion, I'd have to watch it again. I've watched it twice. I liked what Carell did. I know he's just new to being nominated with Foxcatcher. So he's like, we're saying, like how we realize now where it's like Jennifer Lawrence is pretty much going to get a nod because she's won and she's been nominated, and Amy Adams, and that separation is a whole separate problem. But for me, all I wanted was no... well, first of all, Josh, did you see... what of the supporting actors did you see? Did you see Bridge of Spies, Creed? You saw Spotlight.
What I did see for supporting was Spotlight. Yeah, that was. I think that was the only one, actually, embarrassingly okay. So. But of all the ones I, you know, that you could see, I think that's probably the one that had one of the best performances in it by Ruffalo. Yeah, like I said, Tina and loved that movie, loved his performance in it. And even at his most explosive moment, at the emotional climax of the movie, where he's really trying to plead his case to Michael Keaton, who also did a great job, Ruffalo, he keeps it just within bounds. Like you said, you know, it doesn't go the Hallmark movie territory. He keeps it within the grounded, powerful, disciplined performance that it needed. And real quick about him, one thing I found out during the roundtable videos that I was watching leading up to the ceremony, the roundtable I was watching had him and Benicio del Toro in it, and they were talking about their days in acting school when they were taking acting class together. Benicio said, oh, this guy's really good. And then they started talking a little bit, and Benicio said, oh, I knew this guy was driven because I was taking the class living in L.A., he was taking the class driving up from San Diego once a week or twice a week. So he knew that he was a guy that really was on a mission to get into Hollywood. And I liked him since You Can Count on Me. I think that was the first movie of his that I saw. Yeah, he did a great job as the vulnerable brother of Laura Linney's.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
Of course, he was in the Hulk. He was the Hulk in Avengers. So I do not love that.
And then he does well in like those little rom-coms, like the one he did with Reese Witherspoon. Must Be Heaven or something like that, where she's in a coma and kind of lives in his apartment. So he kind of does the lighter kind of rom-com kind of stuff too. I really like when they played that really dark that detective in that Meg Ryan movie where she played that prostitute, something that was totally
in the cut. Was that it?
Yeah. I think that was it. So I mean, I'll see anything Mark Ruffalo does. Absolutely.
Yeah, you can count on me actually. If that goes back far enough, Josh, I think you recommended that back to me. I don't remember if that was right after film school or during, but I love Matthew Broderick when he finally got out of the Ferris Bueller shadow. But for this, I didn't know the Bridge of Spies guy was nominated, but Josh, I highly recommend you see this film because as much as Creed is not a Rocky film, and trust me, you have to like gag me to get me into a Rocky film. I was so, I mean, Josh has heard me ramble. I was so against Stallone winning, and the guy who won, I thought personally deserved it because he did what we've been saying about, you know, that turn into a Hallmark movie or the effect. I think, like you probably noticed, Aaron, there was so many scenes where he was in a position where any actor would have made it a spectacle, and without ruining it, he used one line.
I didn't really know much about him. I had to Google him. I'm like, man, talk about a sleeper. I guess he's a 3-time Tony winner. So his background is worth seeing.
Okay.
I mean, Josh, he managed...
I wonder he's so good.
I can't say what it is because it's actually a line that would spoil the running joke, but what...
I'm going to see it soon.
Yeah, what blew me out of my chair was that this guy just recited a single line, and he's now made me realize I'm not looking at Tom Hanks. And to do that with one line, not a great, boisterous Pacino speech or De Niro threatening somebody that you always expect, I was really glad to see him win. And especially, what a follow-up for that category for J.K. Simmons. I remember that was another movie that you had recommended to me, Aaron, and I was a bonehead who skipped seeing it as San Diego Film Festival because they said it was whiplash, and I had recently been in a car wreck, and I thought, I don't feel like someone that got in a car wreck, so I skipped it, and then it was J.K. Simmons winning the Oscar. Supporting actress, I did not get to finish The Danish Girl. My computer kept stalling on it, and I was mainly looking at Eddie Redmayne. Hateful Eight, Carol, Spotlight, we've discussed Rachel McAdams, and you weren't big on Steve Jobs. So how do you feel with her compared to Jennifer Jason Leigh or Carol for the girl who won for Danish Girl, Aaron?
When I left The Danish Girl, I thought to myself, she needs an Oscar as soon as I walked out of the movie. What I loved about Jennifer Jason Leigh in Hateful Eight, first of all, you haven't seen her in a long time.
Yes.
I mean, I haven't seen her in a long time. And she was so disgusting and so Tarantino over the top. I mean, her mouth was foul. She kept getting punched in the face, and her teeth were knocked out. She was in a boys' man's world, and she was playing it to the nines. I thought she was very, very entertaining. I really enjoyed it. Go ahead.
Oh no, go ahead. I was just saying she was brilliant.
She was, but what I liked about Alicia Vikander, if I'm pronouncing it right. First of all, she was portraying a real character, and I think that can be difficult because, you know, people may have known her. But I loved the arc that she played, and as much as Jennifer Jason Leigh was great and funny, there was no arc to her story. She was just offensive and foul and obnoxious the entire movie. But she did it well. Don't get me wrong. But the woman in Danish Girl, I mean, she was this beautifully happily married woman. And then she sees this kind of stuff going on, and then you see her going, but I miss my husband. And he's like, I'm sorry. I just can't. He's dead. But she's like, but he's not to me. And you just saw this beautiful, then she kind of made peace with it. But I thought her storyline was lovely. I didn't see El Machina, so I had never seen her before. So I thought, who is this woman? She's Ex Machina. Who is this woman? She's stunning. And she was wonderful. And I thought, she better get an Oscar. But, of course, I always think Eddie Redmayne deserves an Oscar for everything he does because he's just phenomenal.
Well, just before I forget, because I'm so forgetful, I want to let people know, the listeners, that there are two nominees that we don't usually see that are on Netflix, which, of course, is What Happened, Miss Simone, about the incomparable Nina Simone. For younger generation, my age and even younger, it is basically, you're going to hear Lauryn Hill, and it's just, there's no female rap singers without Nina Simone. And then also, I discovered through a PR announcement, looking for interviews, which is who we might have on later this week or next week, a documentary short subject nominee called Last Day of Freedom. So I want to make sure that the audience, and I'm pretty sure I had told Josh, but if I hadn't told you, that we usually don't, that's the weird thing about the Oscars, we usually don't get to see the docs unless an art house runs them, or the short animation, the shorts. Once in a while we get the foreign film. So to know that two of these are streaming on Netflix, and when you mentioned new voting, there had to have been something because if I recall correctly, the reason why they're always releasing it Christmas Day is because it has to play 1 week in LA and New York, or it has to win a qualifying festival. And What Happened, Miss Simone was a Netflix original. So it didn't play festivals and it didn't play theaters. So that was kind of interesting to see that it was so well made and done that it picked up a doc nomination. I personally thought it should have won. I thought it was one of the best, whether you like jazz, blues. It was just an amazing thing. Now, since we're kind of in a, where we've kind of know what we've seen, since you've seen them all, Aaron and Josh, you can mm-hmm. definitely get on this with Revenant, Mad Max, and I'm sorry, I forgot if you told me you saw Sicario.
I didn't.
No, I did not. I didn't either.
Okay. So Sicario, definitely see. Aaron, I recommend it to you just because I am still scratching my head on somebody who loves film this much and isn't a film director.
and I love Emily Blunt, so I will see that. I will see that.
Yeah, Sicario.
And Benicio del Toro is fantastic in it too.
Yeah, okay. It's master Roger Deakins. He manages to make the screen smell like Mexico. I couldn't believe it. The problem here is with the cinematography for me was Hateful Eight started out that first 10 minutes. I thought, okay, this is DP nomination or win. But then when everything went inside, I just thought that it was cool to keep it creative in a room. It was a bit long for my taste. I liked the performance. I love Bruce Dern. I love Samuel L. Jackson. Like you said, Jennifer Jason Leigh, she's been gone a while. But that award, it was just kind of like, I feel like the way we got used to, and I'm sure as a movie fan, Aaron, you probably got used to this. Okay, Paul Newman's nominated again, but he's not going to win. And Pacino's got his sixth, and he's not going to win. And it just kind of became standard. So I kind of feel like there's this, the DP, Gravity, Birdman, and now setting a record with The Revenant. I mean, and three BAFTAs, three ASC awards. It's like he's going to have to just make a horrible film next year, or he's just going to go on a spree of taking all the cinematography awards. So that category to me, I honestly didn't even really pay attention to it except for Deakins. And just because how much I know you love Deakins, I, to tell you the truth, Josh, I know you like Tarantino, so I'd watch Hateful Eight and Mad Max you had mentioned to me. But I would not recommend any of these films for the cinematography aside from Sicario.
It was The Revenant, though?
Weird category. I mean, can you tell us something about Carol as far as the camera work goes, Aaron?
See, like I said, you two look for different things in movies than I do. Like I said to Josh, I can watch the Oscars in 15 minutes. The stuff that I'm interested in is not is like he likes like sound and lighting and photography and CG and FX, and I don't even think about that stuff, you know, as much.
She likes the above the line stuff.
Yeah, I like the top five. I did see some of the, you know, I did see Amy and stuff like that, but a lot of them just like you know, best. You know, sound editing, I don't even think about that, nor do I care. I'm not even sure if I know what it is. So some of the stuff that you guys focus on, I don't.
What that basically is say, the how do they want Godzilla to sound when he squashed something in San Francisco? What was the best way that they made all that go together? I mean, at least for visual effects, you saw The Martian, you saw Revenant, you saw Star Wars, and you saw Mad Max. So for you as someone, you know, who has a son working in that area and learns and hears more about it, I'm interested in what your take would be on the visual effects, especially since your son didn't work on any of them, so there's no bias. how that would be. I mean, that's a completely fresh view.
And to me, like, I would be more likely to walk out of a movie and talk about how, like, I do remember leaving The Revenant going, wow, this was beautifully shot. And then I talked to Josh. He was like, oh, Mom, it was all natural lighting. And they shot only in natural lighting, so they had to finish by like 4:30 because they were in Canada for a while, and they had to schlep half the day in to bring. So I was like, wow. But I remember thinking, this is stunning. I didn't know how it was done or why it was done. I just thought some of the shots, like, you know, the camera through the dripping icicles with the sun, I thought was beautiful. I will notice photography, but I can tell you right now that I would never come out of a movie going, wow, that sound editing kicked some serious butt. I wouldn't notice that. And CG stuff, like a lot of movies I only go see if I know Josh worked on. Like, I would never have gone to see, as we say, Katara. I would not have seen Godzilla or probably Divergent if Josh hadn't worked on it. So him working on some of these movies gets me to go see them. I mean, I would have seen The Avenger because that's just a blockbuster. But some of the other ones, like Jack and the Giant, Jack, I only saw that because Josh worked on it.
Oh, I love that.
Did you see, Ex Machina, Mo?
Favorite movie of what Josh.
Did you say you had seen Ex Machina?
No, I had not. I hadn't even heard of it. Pat
okay,
told me about
so
it.
That's probably the movie you should watch next out of all the remaining ones that you missed. Because it has, first of all, Alicia Vikander as the lead actress in it. And
right.
So you can see her getting her performance.
Yeah.
What's that?
Because Pat had said that she lost out to Cate Blanchett in a previous award show, but it was because Alicia was nominated for Ex Machina, not mm-hmm. for The Danish Girl. It was, I don't know what award it was. I don't know if it was the British, whatever. But,
right.
Yeah, because I said to Pat how much I love The Danish Girl. She goes, oh, did you ever see Ex Machina? She was in it. I said, no. I said, that's why I've never seen her. And then I was watching
the other
night.
It's a very
disturbing
movie.
Okay.
But it's but the visual effects in it are great. It's a much, obviously, I mean, how could it not be next to Star Wars, but it's a much smaller scale visual effects feature. But at the same time, the visual effects look terrific, and you really get sucked into the entire concept of the movie, which is how real can something be when it's obviously fake? How real can it feel, in other words? How much can you get emotionally attached to it when you know that it's fake? In a way, it's got this great message about artificial intelligence, you know, robotics, visual effects in movies, you name it. It touches on a lot of similar situations that people find themselves in modern day life, where they know that a lot of what they see around them is not actually what's there, or it's been adjusted. You know, if it's advertising or photography, even a lot of things just get touched up in the computer this way or that. But in this movie, the entire premise is how much can you separate your feelings from your mind when it comes to interacting with something that's has artificial intelligence, like she does as the android. But yeah, it's very good.
Okay.
Very good. And it won the best visual effects and a big surprise underdog win at the Oscars, which I think had basically everybody surprised. I don't think anybody predicted that would win.
But it
did have a milestone. Oh, just to make one last point. But when it did win, I'm 99% sure that it was the first time that a woman won for the visual effects category, Sarah Bennett. So congratulations to her and the rest of that team.
Well,
awesome.
I have to disagree because I think women should just be secretaries in the office, but that's just my take.
oh, Jesus. Gotta go. It's been fun.
3 million people will have heard me say that. Josh, one quick question. With Mike, you know
sure.
my condition, and you always warn me about movies. Would I be able to handle checking that out?
Ex Machina is not shot like Mad Max. It's not shot like Star Wars. It's a much tamer movie in terms of the cinematography and the editing of it. I think you'd have no problem with it, yeah.
Yeah, because I got to go back to Star Wars once it hits DVD, small screen. It's much less risk. I thought Star Wars, there was part of me that thought it was a shoo-in for the awards, but then when it won nothing, I saw it as kind of like, well, you did $2 billion in 3 weeks, so who really cares about what statues are going to go in your office?
Well, and that also proves the point that the Oscars are not about box office. I mean, as much as that'll increase their odds for a nomination, when it comes down to who actually gets awarded, there's very little correlation, I mean, between box office returns and, you know, number of Oscars at the end of the night.
Well, I want to check out...
Just ask the Spotlight.
Oh, no, sorry. Go ahead.
I was just saying, just ask the makers of Spotlight.
Well, the last category we'll wrap up with, we still have 10 minutes, but was Best Director. I'm a little bit shocked because, A, I would have to go back. Josh probably has this quickly researched. An action movie, I guess maybe William Friedkin with The French Connection, winning Best Director for an action movie. Adam McKay, The Big Short. I think it's hilarious that the guy behind all those dumb Will Ferrell movies is an Oscar-winning director, and Hitchcock's not. The Revenant, that again was like the cinematography. I knew it was going to go to it, and I want to bring up a point that I'm frustrated about, because Gravity, after you taught me what you taught me, Josh, if you really watch that movie, it's George Clooney and Sandra Bullock just standing there. I mean,
that wasn't such a great movie. Yeah, I would be totally okay if I died never seeing that a second time.
Yeah, I had to go back because Josh taught me some stuff, and I thought, oh my God, they might have been sitting in a chair and then cut out the sound of them drinking coffee, and it's like, no wonder they... It made whatever it made. It set that huge record at the time, and these directors.
Well, had you put two other actors in that, I only saw because of the two people in it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. I mean, I'll watch anything with Clooney, because, as Josh knows, I once laid a towel that he sat on. But
oh, that's right. When he did the Descendants in Hawaii, Josh. Yeah, Josh, tell me about that.
Yeah,
permanent
bragging rights. My high achievements, because I keep telling Josh, if he just keeps working hard enough, he'll move out of doing Godzilla and Furious 7, and he'll get to lay towels down for people. one can have on this, Josh.
A mother can dream.
Yes, a mother can dream, which is funny because my dad saw that movie and actually got excited that was the towel. And I just thought, okay, I guess it applies to anything. So for all these, please, since we all know how to get a hold of each other, if any of these that we don't usually get to see, the docs, eventually hit libraries. I'm fortunate to have a great librarian who, will go out once they're available, and he'll order all the Best Picture nominations. He'll order the foreign film nominations. He'll get the, because we have one theater nearby me that'll have it'll run the animated features for one day. It'll run the animated shorts. It'll run the short docs, but it's $15. So you got to.
Yeah, mine does that in Tacoma. It's called the Grand. And I'm a member, so I only pay $5 for a movie, but they had, in one afternoon, they had all the short documentaries showing. And it was $5 to get in, and you saw all of them. And then the next day, it was just for a couple of days, and the next day was all the animated. So for $5, and I don't know how long a short documentary is, what's the timing on them? Is it an hour, 45 minutes? I don't know.
Oh, yeah.
But they showed all of them in one day.
Yeah, the one I saw was 31 minutes. And it was great. And Josh, definitely see it, because it's animation. I'm actually surprised that it came off in the documentary, because they animate a documentary, and I enjoyed it. I watched it with someone who was 70, so it was rough for him, because some of it is kind of about the civil rights era. So he kind of walked out because he remembered seeing those riots, and he's also a gay man, so he remembers going through riots and having bricks thrown at him because he was gay, so it was just too much for him to handle. But yeah. I definitely recommend it and want to make sure that people see it. I'll plug it one more time. Last Day of Freedom is on Netflix, and What okay. Happened, Simone, you got to see on Netflix. But for overall, other than that the show was a tiny bit boring, I liked Chris Rock's jokes. And I was pretty much happy with the winner. Other than, I really wanted Room to take home Best Director. I knew Spotlight was going to take it, just because, you know, they had to show that they support, you know, that they're against, you know, they have to take some kind of political stance on it. But I felt like Room, of the four nominees I saw were, I mean, I subscribe to, it's harder to do easy than it is to do grandiose. So
yeah.
Where I wrap up, and now it's your guys' floor to anything that we missed or any upset you felt or a great film you got turned on now and now you want to see that after and anything. Fire away.
I tell you one thing. I just wanted one thing about the Oscars. Was I the only one who noticed, why didn't anybody say anything about all the music that was playing? So it sounded like every time the music was playing, it was an Oscar-winning song from many, many years, like Footloose was on one time, and a song from Grease. And I thought, these must all, but no one, like Chris Rock never said anything like, yeah, the music tonight. So did you notice that, you guys, when you're watching the music that was playing? Coming back from commercials and things like that?
On the overhead?
Just the music that the orchestra was playing during the Oscars. It was all
coming
like,
back from commercial, that sort of thing? I did not notice that, no.
But I did it was like, okay. And then I remember saying to my guests, they must be playing Oscar-winning songs from over the years. So, you know, and I thought maybe Chris Rock might have said something. My friend had a good point. She said what she missed this year is there was no tribute. So a lot of times there's a tribute to costumes of Hollywood or something, and she said that there wasn't any tribute. And she said she kind of missed that.
I didn't miss that personally. I think the show already runs so long. It's a complaint that everybody has every year is how overlong the show is. Paul just said, I was a little bit bored this year. I think that any other year that complaint would have been, I was really bored this year. So I think they did something right by having it be only a little bit this year. They still ran over, you know, it's a show that has a lot of fundamental flaws, I think, with the way it's structured. They had totally different producers this year. It did feel fresh. I don't think many people were complaining about necessarily the same things that they normally do. It didn't feel like the typical Oscars to me. And that was a good thing. I thought it was much more entertaining. Yeah, the pacing was a little better. Like I said, last year there were just, on the tribute note especially, there were several of those. And as much as I love seeing, you know, The Sound of Music turn 50 and moments like that, at a certain point you do have to keep your running time in mind. And, it's already pretty bloated. I'm a fan of expanding the categories. I think stunt performers should get their own category. I think that there's just too few categories being recognized at the moment. So if we're going to ever have that sort of discussion, other stuff has to go. And so Oscar...
And I think CG
one
actors,
last thing,
like...
My wife was saying they should just have... The performer that wins the award for best song, they should be the one that performs. If you can just pick one, and so, you know, as much as that would have meant on Sunday that we wouldn't have got the Lady Gaga song because she did not end up winning, strangely. I was personally have been not a huge fan of the musical numbers. It's just been one thing for me that the show could easily do without and save that running time. But, you know, I'm not everybody. Yeah. I don't represent most opinions.
You know what?
I know that.
Speaking of running time, we've hit our 45-second mark. I know we could probably do the show till 5 a.m. And I just want to thank you guys for coming on. You already know you're welcome back, and we'll cook up some ideas. Josh, as always, we'll have you back on. Aaron, we'll continue with it did really good with the second reviewers, and you were one of the first ones to do that. So I definitely want to be talking to you about that. So now that we're down to 15 seconds, I want to say aloha and thank you for coming on. And I don't mean to cut it short, but I hope you guys have a wonderful night.
You too. And as somebody who does not have a $5 movie theater near him, may I just say, I hate you both. All right.
Love you, mean it. Go to bed. Bye, guys. Thank you. Thank you. Peace out. Seattle says peace out.
Loved it.
Okay. Good night, guys.
Good night.
Thank you for listening to the Talking Pictures Podcast, real conversation and movie-induced inspiration.